She was a fertility clinic nurse. Kind-eyed, quiet, invisible to most of the powerful men who paid to have their genetics preserved, perfected, and distributed. But one vial changed everything. It wasn't just any donor. It was him. Tech billionaire Mason Carr. Young, scandal-free, absurdly wealthy, and notoriously private about his reproductive clauses. No known heirs, no unauthorized use, no exceptions. So when a nurse with access to his DNA defied every legal and ethical boundary and inseminated herself without consent, it should have been an open and shut case of criminal fraud. But she flipped the script. Instead of denying the pregnancy, she weaponized it, claiming Mason raped her. That the child wasn't stolen, but conceived in violence. And the DNA that was supposed to free him, now used as proof of guilt. Was she a delusional opportunist chasing a billion-dollar payout? Or was she exposing the dark secret of a man who thought his wealth could protect him from everything, even the truth? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. Terms of Conception. The fertility clinic was sleek, sterile, and shielded by privacy policies that rivaled the Pentagon. No media, no leaks, no surnames on the donor vials, only codes. And that was exactly how Mason Carr wanted it. To the outside world, Mason was the epitome of the American tech dream. A dropout-turned-billionaire who created secure identity software that governments now used globally. But what few people knew was that Mason harbored one obsession more private than his code. His legacy. He didn't believe in marriage, didn't believe in relationships, but he did believe in control. And that meant controlling how, and if, his DNA was passed on. Clause 9.3 of the private donor agreement with Apex Fertility stated clearly, "Donor sperm shall not be utilized under any circumstance without express written authorization from donor Carr or his assigned legal proxy. Unauthorized use shall constitute a breach of contract, subject to civil and criminal penalties, and shall invalidate all parental claims, rights, and entitlements." And yet, it happened. Riley Shaw was the nurse no one noticed. Blonde hair in a messy bun, a touch of mascara, clean scrubs, and a dangerously quiet kind of ambition. She watched the donor logs obsessively, noting which samples were retrieved, used, destroyed, or held in quarantine. Mason's samples had the highest level clearance. Triple locked, biometrically coded, and labeled with a non-identifying internal number known only to the legal team. But Riley saw the number input one morning when the lawyer left his tablet screen active in the recovery room. She didn't need the code. She was the access. It took 2 weeks to plan the switch. The patient whose sample was supposed to be used that day, a lawyer from Atlanta, had already been inseminated during a mock cycle. All Riley had to do was update the database to reflect a phantom procedure. Then, after hours, she would extract the Carr vial from cold storage and perform a self-insemination in one of the vacant exam rooms. No one saw her. No one even suspected. She logged the sample as disposed due to cross-contamination. 3 weeks later, her pregnancy test was positive. The media didn't hear about it until her lawyer filed the suit. "My client alleges that Mr. Carr drugged and raped her under false pretenses," the statement read. "He utilized his position of influence at Apex to silence internal scrutiny and to facilitate unauthorized access to Ms. Shaw's body. The resulting child is living evidence of this violation." Riley's eyes filled with tears in the televised interview. "I didn't ask to be pregnant. I didn't ask for any of this. He promised it would stay between us. Then he ghosted me, like I was trash. Mason Carr's response was brief and brutal. These allegations are categorically false. I have never met Ms. Shaw in any personal capacity. Any use of my genetic material without consent is not only unauthorized, it is criminal. But the damage had been done. The public didn't care about clauses or contracts. They cared about power and imbalance. Riley became a symbol of a different kind of victimhood. The working class woman, allegedly used and discarded by a billionaire who thought his sperm was sacred. Carr's legal team launched a countersuit for reproductive theft, a phrase that became a trending hashtag. But public sympathy didn't waver, especially after Riley's lawyers released screenshots of text messages, supposedly from Carr, that said, "No one will believe you anyway. Keep your mouth shut and I'll pay for everything. Delete the baby if you want. Just don't drag me into this." The texts were traced to a burner number. The phone was never recovered. Digital forensics couldn't link the messages directly to Mason. But the question lingered. Why would a nurse invent such an elaborate lie? Unless it wasn't a lie at all. Carr's lead investigator, a former FBI profiler named Devin Leary, smelled fabrication from the start. "This wasn't rape," he told Carr bluntly. "It was theft. And this woman is either the most delusional opportunist we've ever seen, or a sociopathic genius." Leary's team found Riley's search history. Hundreds of articles on sperm donors, inheritance laws, and civil suits involving paternity fraud. They also found a hidden drive in her apartment. On it was a folder labeled Heirs. It contained screenshots of Mason Carr's childhood home, school transcripts, past relationships, photos of his mother, even public records from the estate trust he had set up to avoid ever having children. The clause in that document read, "All financial benefits from the Mason Carr Trust shall be nullified in the event of an unauthorized biological heir. No funds shall be distributed in perpetuity." Translation: anyone born from his DNA would never see a cent unless they made it public and sued. But there was one problem. Riley had a signed donor consent form in her files, with his signature, dated 2 months before her pregnancy. Carr's lawyers were stunned. It looked legitimate. The signature matched previous records. But Carr swore he never signed it. Forgery? Deep fake? Or was there something even more dangerous going on? As the trial approached, the stakes skyrocketed. Carr refused to settle. Riley refused to drop the charges. The child, a son born 2 months early, had Carr's dimples, his blood type, his DNA. And one day Carr's mother showed up outside Riley's house with a handwritten letter and a bouquet of blue hydrangeas. The press went wild. What did she know? What had Carr really done? And why was the billionaire suddenly silent? 40 Chapter 2. DNA isn't destiny courtroom. 12B at the Los Angeles Superior Court was standing room only when the trial began. Reporters called it the contraceptive clause case. Protesters outside held signs that read, "Believe women" on one side and "Stop sperm theft" on the other. The prosecution presented their star witness, Riley Shaw, dressed in pale gray, no makeup, clutching a baby photo, calm, controlled. "He promised he'd take care of us," she said. "Then he threatened me. I didn't even know his real name at first." The DNA test was irrefutable. 99.97% match. Mason Carr was the biological father. But was he the rapist? The defense began with an unexpected bombshell. Carr's lead attorney wheeled in a cart stacked with documents, topped by a digital forensic report. The signed consent form, a deepfake composite generated by AI using real forms and a handwriting simulator. It had been traced back to a Wi-Fi router registered to Riley's ex-boyfriend, a former darknet hacker. Under pressure, he flipped. Testified under oath that Riley had planned the whole thing. She said she'd be set for life. All she needed was the baby and the lie. But the defense didn't stop there. They played clinic security footage, grainy, time-stamped, showing Riley entering the cold storage room after hours. She used an unauthorized override code. The logs had been wiped. But a backup, recovered from a shadow server, restored the original data. Car sample retrieved at 2241. Not registered. Never returned. The courtroom gasped. Then came the voice recording. A 3-minute audio file pulled from Riley's old phone titled, Insurance. In it, Riley said, "Once he finds out, I'll say it was rape. No jury will convict a single mom, not when the baby looks like him." The judge paused the proceedings. Riley fainted. The jury deliberated for 11 hours. They returned with a split verdict. Criminal rape charge, not guilty. Civil damages for unauthorized insemination, guilty. Carr was awarded full parental rights. Riley was sentenced to 14 months in prison for fraud, forgery, and perjury. But the real damage had already been done. Carr's reputation and the very concept of consensual reproduction in the age of biotechnology was forever changed. The internet exploded with think pieces. Should DNA require a permission slip? When victims lie, who pays the price? Can a woman steal a baby if she's the one giving birth? The world was no longer divided by left and right, but by who you believed and what you feared more. A billionaire with power or a woman with none? Carr later gave a single interview. He held his son in his arms. "He's not a mistake," he said. "But the way he came into this world, that can never happen again." Then he paused and added quietly, "I forgive her, but I will never forget."